And now to President Biden on the world stage in his first international trip as president. A lot of ground to cover. And wrapping with that meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, Biden was asked several times in his press conference whether he could trust Putin.
This is not about trust. This is about self-interest and verification of self-interest. That's what it's about.
What are your takeaways from Biden's trip? He declared the U.S. is back. Are we? 800-642-1234. Bruce Gentleson is professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. Bruce, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
So Biden declared that America is back at the table. What does that mean to you through your foreign policy lens?
Yeah, the parts of the trip kind of fit together. You know, the first were the meetings with allies, the G7, NATO, and the European Union. And there he's basically saying that, look, we don't agree on everything, but we're friends and allies. We do better when we work together. Let's be honest about our differences, but we mostly have commonalities. We're back to work with you. With the adversaries, with the Russians, with Putin, you know, it was very different. It was, we don't want a new Cold War with you. But we're done with what happened in the previous administration, which is somehow believing you more than we believe our own intelligence agencies. We'll find ways to work together. And we're going to be honest about our differences, and we're going to challenge you on the differences.
Yeah, you know, we heard a lot on this trip about improved relations with U.S. allies. But, you know, what were some of the sticking points? Where did you see the tension?
Interesting. You know, so one of the issues, there's always trade issues. Mm-hmm. And there's long dispute about aircraft, Boeing and Airbus, that got worked out. But there were also other issues that they had, and they set up processes to work on those. Another issue was China. You know, I have to say, you know, I support President Biden in many ways, but I worry that we're kind of overdoing the China threat now, you know, and risking a possible new Cold War with them. And there are issues to deal with them, but you don't want to go too far. And there the allies, some of the allies said, you know, we're a little worried. You Americans sometimes tend to go too far with your threats, and we want to push back on you to find a balance on those. So that was an issue that was pretty, you know, they papered it over, but there's a lot to work on there.
I wonder, I've been really eager to ask you this. Have vaccines been a testing ground for international cooperation? What has vaccine diplomacy exposed to you?
Okay, you know, you and I and our families and all your listeners, it's been, you know, an amazing year, almost year and a half now. And I think that what we're seeing is that while the United States has had some companies that have been very successful at developing vaccines, and we're taking care of our own people first, pandemics, this one and the next one, which is not if but when, won't go away unless we find ways to work together. So the allies together announced 1 billion doses for the poorer countries in the world. That's great. Number one, we got to see if we really deliver on that. And number two, it's just a drop in the bucket. The best vaccine diplomacy is everybody try to work together because you're not going to be able to travel or things come in through shipping until we all find ways to deal with this as a global problem.
I want to circle back to NATO, the NATO allies, the alliance of countries from Europe and North America. And, you know, you kind of skimmed over a lot of challenges here. There's the challenge from Russia, the cyber attacks, the more assertive China. How much of a difference is it from NATO's perspective going from the Trump era to the Biden administration era?
It's so different. You know, Trump was the first Republican and Democratic presidents have always agreed and disagreed. Trump was the first president to somehow treat NATO as a problem rather than as an asset. NATO is not the solution to all of these. It's particularly important for dealing with the Russians in Europe and on the Ukraine issue, on some of the countries that are now members of NATO that used to be part of the Soviet Union, like Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. But it's a military alliance. And some of the other issues are political, diplomatic, and economic. And we need other mechanisms and relationships to deal with those.
What does Biden want out of NATO? What does it want out of, you know, modernizing NATO?
You know, there was a big issue about, you know, who's contributing what. That continues to be an issue. And there are differences there. Trump made that the major issue, is that, you know, as if it was sort of paying your country club dues. And so NATO needs to work together primarily on the Russian threat, both on the ground and also the cyber issues. You know, President Biden said he gave Putin a list of particular parts of our society, not military things, but, you know, oil and gas pipelines.
16 areas of critical infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are really important. And I think, you know, frankly, a president who knows what he's doing doesn't get out in public and say, here's what I demanded or threatened Putin, because it makes it less likely that you're going to be able to solve the problem. He's confident enough to say, yeah, these are the issues. And let me just tell you that we talked about them. And we talked about them vigorously. And I've made it clear we have assets, too. And we'll, you know, and we'll see over the next 6 months if we make progress on that. That's kind of the way you do it, rather than get out there and beat your chest and say, you know, I told him what to do. That doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Biden has said he wants that stable, predictable relationship with Russia. But, you know, the hallmark of Putin is his, you know, unpredictability. So as Putin returns to Russia, what is his position on the U.S. now?
Well, it's interesting. Even when we've had differences, when we have common interests, we work together, right? So as soon as Biden came into office, we renewed the nuclear arms treaties. That's really our biggest issue with Russia, given that we have both have the largest arsenals of nuclear weapons. Secondly, if you go back to 2015, despite everything else, we worked together on the Iran issue, right? We worked together to get Iran to agree to a deal that they were observing until Trump pulled out of it. And now we're working together to get the deal back. In Syria, we have differences. But one of the things that Biden stressed was, you know, working together to get humanitarian aid to people on the ground. And Putin's finding out that, you know, Assad, the leader in Syria, isn't a great friend to have. He's expensive. He's unreliable. So you find areas in which you can work together, even when you have differences. And then you try to manage those differences while you're doing both. It's kind of a two-track strategy.
We have Duke University public policy and political science professor, author of The Peacemakers, Bruce Gentleson, is here with analysis on President Biden's first international trip, a busy one. How do you think President Biden did at the G7 summit? What direction do you see the U.S. moving in foreign policy? What did the trip tell you about Biden's worldview? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Bruce Gentleson here on the Ideas Network. We're getting your reaction to the Biden-Putin summit on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Biden, in his press conference, said he made no threats to Putin, and they talked about basic, fundamental things.
Just letting him know where I stood, what I thought we could accomplish together, and what, in fact, if there were violations of American sovereignty, what we would do.
Do you think the U.S. and Russia are able to find common ground? What should the U.S. do about cyber attacks? Join in 800-642-1234. Bruce Gentleson is a public policy and political science professor at Duke, and he served in the Obama administration. State Department stays with us. Let's bring in perspective from Mike in Shell Lake. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What are your thoughts on President Biden's first international trip?
Well, I honestly, Biden come across weak and like a bumbling fool, like he has been for everything. I mean, nothing got settled. They didn't discuss it. And I think Putin honestly had to think Biden was a joke. That's about all I can say about it.
Bruce, what are your thoughts in the face-to-face meeting, Biden coming across weak to Mike?
Yeah, I disagree, Mike. I mean, I have to say, I've had, you know, criticisms of President Biden on a number of issues. But when Putin said he's very professional, he's very different than your other leader, I kind of think the irony was that Putin was taking a shot at Trump, who had done a total embrace of Putin. And so, you know, Biden really showed his experience. He reminded me of George H.W. Bush, who came to the presidency with a lot of experience. And like a lot of things in life, whether it's business or anything, experience matters. And so when he said, I didn't threaten him, but he said, I told him what our interests are and what we disagree with and what we would do. You know, I think that was pretty right way to say it, that, you know, you don't want a headline saying threats, but you made it clear privately. So I think he was quite good, frankly, in carrying this out.
They agreed to begin some diplomatic conversations around cybersecurity. Is talking a first step there? What did you see?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, sometimes you just talk and it goes nowhere and there's a process that kind of goes sideways. And Biden himself said, you know, it's going to take months. Let's see where we are in 6 months. And so if you and I are talking 6 months from now and nothing, I don't expect total solution, but nothing has come out of this, then it would be fair to say that, oh, the summit was just, you know, its own version of a photo op. But they highlighted the two of the really key issues with Russia. You know, one is nuclear weapons, and second is cyber. And third, to a certain extent, was Ukraine. But really, the Europeans, since they're there, have more of a role in that than we do.
Hmm. What do you see out of nuclear and nuclear arms?
You know, ever since, you know, even going back to Richard Nixon in the 1970s during the Cold War, we realized that it was in neither country's interest to just keep building arsenals. It was expensive. It was dangerous. Some of us are old enough to live through the Cuban Missile Crisis, pretty scary times. And so we consistently have worked on those issues. You know, Bill Clinton did, George W. Bush did, Obama did. And the fact that right away, right after January 20th, this was an area that Russians and Americans agreed to keep a treaty going, not let it expire and work on, says a lot about this notion of where we have common interests, let's work on them. And, you know, it's easy to forget nuclear weapons. They're sort of out there.
There are so many other things. Yeah. You know, Biden is among a string of presidents who've met with Putin. Putin stood there on the world stage with Biden. How important was it to engage with America again and talk about arms control?
You know, sometimes I hear, including from people on the liberal side, that it's a privilege to meet with an American president. I don't really buy that. You know, Russia's been a powerful and important country in the world for, you know, centuries before we were even a country. They don't need us to say that they're a major power. And the notion that you're meeting with the other major military power, you come to the world stage, you know, as, you know, in common ground in that way. So it wasn't a privilege. It was a necessary part of doing business.
Let's go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. What were your observations?
Hi. So I feel that all the leaders on the world stage in that case are remiss because we have a global crisis going on where the climate is clearly changing. We have crazy wildfires burning in five states out west. And it's only a matter of time before, like, there's going to be multiple areas on multiple different continents that are all devastated by whatever natural disasters occurring, be it superstorms or, you know, typhoons or wildfires. And we're going to need cooperation. And we're all on this spaceship called Earth, and we kind of need to keep it together because if there's no Earth, there's no need to squabble over the rest of this stuff.
Marcus, thank you. The threat of climate change rises above all.
Yeah, Marcus, I totally agree with you. I think one of the flaws in the G7 meeting was too much emphasis on China, not enough on climate. You know, there's a big meeting coming up in November in Glasgow, Scotland, of all the world countries that had signed this Paris Agreement back in 2015. And frankly, nobody's meeting their obligations, not just, you know, us. And climate change, you know, is, as they say, you know, existential. Yeah, China's a serious threat. To me, climate change and the next pandemic, this and the next pandemic are the two greatest threats. They, you know, pandemic killed the most people, more than wars have. So I agree with you. I think we can't just keep that on the side. I would have put that front and center to the G7 meeting. And then, you know, it's a priority with China and other countries, too. G7 can't solve it on its own.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Bruce Gentleson, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, as he gives us analysis of President Biden's first international trip. Don is joining us from Merrill with reaction. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I just wanted to say that I'm really happy that we have a president that's no longer pandering to nonsense. You know, what we had in Trump was a guy that he talked big, but it was all fluff. Biden comes on and he brings sensibility. He's very pragmatic, and his experience really represents the United States as a whole to the rest of the country, which is something that we desperately needed compared to the previous 4 years with Trump. Thank you.
Don, thanks. Your reaction there, Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that's why there have been Republican presidents that I've disagreed with before, you know, Reagan, George W. Bush, but never one that I truly thought was dangerous to the country and the world. And that's my view. And I think the other thing is Biden has a very good team. They're very experienced, transparency, many are colleagues and friends of mine, but they've worked with Republicans and Democrats before. The people around Trump were all like believers in Trump. And really nothing else. And that's just dangerous for the country and for the world.
Biden and his advisors have said they want to do a better job of connecting foreign policy with domestic policy. What might that look like through your lens? How do you do that?
I think number one is the trade issue. That, you know, we're trying to make sure that trade doesn't just benefit major American companies. So, for example, cracking down on tax havens. You know, you don't want companies closing factories in Wisconsin just because labor is cheaper in China. You've got to be able to have the benefits of trade and globalization for the average American all over the country. I think number two really are things like the pandemic and healthcare, and you know, using what we've been through in the pandemic to not only deal with COVID, but also realize that we need to deliver health services in rural areas and other areas, and that is part of foreign policy because you're linking with others around the world to do so. And so to bring it home to people so that they see that it's not just something being done way out there, but it also affects their daily lives in here.
In the last few moments we have with you, what are you watching with the U.S.-Russia relationship going forward?
I'm watching follow-through. You know, do these working groups matter? Is there a possibility to make progress on issues like Syria and Ukraine that are military issues? And that also, is there a way to, you know, find a continuity to this? You know, President Biden and Putin should be in constant communication. We've agreed to send our ambassadors back to the capitals. Which people may think, oh, what does that matter? You know, all they do is go to cocktail parties. They do more than that. It's a constant communication. So let's see that we take these steps, even if they're small steps. When they come together, it can put the relationship on sounder footing, even as we continue to have differences.
Bruce, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kate. Thank you, and thank your callers as well.
Bruce Gentleson, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. Just ahead, we examine the historical origins of Juneteenth. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.